This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. Today is the 14th of June 2009 here in Japan, but it is still the 13th of June in Hawaii, where I am joined on the line by Albert Lanier. Albert Lanier is a freelance journalist whose investigative reports on wind power developers have appeared in the Honolulu Weekly and elsewhere on the web. Mr. Lanier, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you very much, James, for having me. And may I say, I really do want to congratulate for having someone like me on your podcast, because critics of wind power like me probably will never get to go on the mainstream media in terms of TV or radio talk shows.
That's very true, and I'd like to get into that. But why don't we start by having you tell us about your investigation into Newton, Massachusetts-based wind developer First Wind.
All right, I will. Basically, I just to give you a little bit of background in regards to how I found out about this story, I was living on the island of Molokai, and basically, I was writing for a newspaper there. That didn't work out. I actually spoke to an editor with a rival newspaper. In the course of our conversation, he mentioned Newton Bay's wind developer, as you mentioned it, First Wind. And he noted they had done an article about First Wind, basically the fact that they had been under investigation by the New York Attorney General's office. That's Andrew Cuomo, who I found out recently is planning to run for governor if the facts about that are actually absolute. He's looking to run for governor, possibly, of New York. In any event, the idea of doing an article about First Wind seemed sound. You know, here was a company under investigation. I'll be quite frank. I knew nothing about wind power, nothing about wind developers, and I had no interest in environmental issues. My view as a freelancer is, be frank, I'll be interested in an issue when you pay me. So I decided when I went back to Honolulu, which is where I'm from, on the island of Oahu, I pitched the idea to Honolulu Weekly, which is a newspaper I hadn't written for before. And Honolulu Weekly is the major, basically the major alternative newspaper in Hawaii. The editor at Honolulu Weekly liked it, and so I went out, did the research, did the interviews, wrote the article. And the article appeared in the October 8th through 14th issue. It was called Variable Wind Trade. And in the article, basically, I looked at First Wind. And I looked at it at two locations. The locations are first Cohocton, New York, which is a small town in the upstate part of that region. And Cohocton is where First Wind has built, they've completed it now, a 50-turbine wind farm. And there's a group called Cohocton Wind Watch that has been fighting First Wind. They failed to stop them from building the wind farm, but they're still around. They're helping other groups. They're still active. And, of course, this 50-turbine wind farm, quite recently, has had some problems. I just got off the phone with someone from Cohocton Wind Watch, one of my sources in New York, and they're telling me that they have to take down all the blades from the turbines because they've been having problems. Now, according to First Wind's website, their farm in New York is operational. But what I've been told by my sources is that they're spinning the blades, but they're not generating electricity via the grid, which is how wind energy provides electricity. You know, it spins, the blades on the turbine spin, and these turbines are anywhere from a couple hundred feet in the air, and then the blades themselves are a couple hundred feet across. Some of them are bigger than football fields. They spin, they generate this, they take this wind energy, generate electricity, which then flows through, basically would be connected to the electrical grid of any town or region, what have you. And that's how electricity is generated, if it indeed isn't generated. So there have been problems with this wind farm in Cohocton, and the latest that I've heard is they have to take down these blades for these turbines, all of them eventually. Now, in any event, First Wind built Cohocton 1, which is what it's called. And what I was told in terms of my interviews with activists in Cohocton was that the modus operandi of First Wind and other wind developers is to come into these smaller towns, especially in New York State. These small towns have boards of supervisors, usually, three or four people. They come into these towns, conduct secret negotiations, in which they generally bribe public officials financially. They also conduct leaseholder contracts, where you have a contract where the land is leased to First Wind, where they can build their turbines. And, of course, the leaseholder is going to get something financial out of it. He's going to be paid for it. So you're talking about outright bribery. In fact, in terms of my reporting, I was told that there have been affidavits that have been filed in the state of New York where witnesses have seen town officials actually taking financial gratuities, bribes, from First Wind officials, supposedly, or wind developers. So we know they bribe, at least those are the allegations, that they conduct leaseholder contracts that are advantageous to the holder of the contract, obviously. And the people who support these projects in town like Cohocton are those who have financial interest in it. I was told recently, again, by activists in New York, that at a public meeting, I believe it was in Cohocton, you go to these public meetings, the vast majority, 95% of people, will speak out against these wind farms and the wind developers. 5% will speak in favor. The 5% are the people who have the financial interest. They've been bribed, or they have the leaseholder contracts, or they have some kind of financial tie or interest to First Wind or other developers. So getting back to their modus operandi, bribery, leaseholder contracts, and of course in this point of these secret negotiations, they wrap them up, and then the deal is announced to the townfolk or the villagers. They say, okay, we're going to have this wind farm come to Cohocton or fill-in-the-blank small town in New York or other parts of the country. And, of course, that's where the, quote, public inquiry comes in. There are meetings. First Wind or other developers send representatives to explain the project. But by then, it's a done deal. So that's Cohocton, New York, where they built Cohocton 1. It's a 50-turbine wind farm. The second part of my article, Variable Wind Trade, took place in the island of Molokai. And this is where First Wind wants to build a wind farm. And, of course, what they have done in Molokai is basically try to seduce the activist groups there. There are groups that have been activists against Molokai Ranch, which is the largest, basically, landowner on the island of Molokai. Molokai Ranch itself, the entity, closed down last year. And so there are 60,000-plus acres that are owned by Molokai Ranch, actually owned by Molokai Ranch Limited, which is owned by the GoCo Group, which is based in Hong Kong. I think they have offices in Singapore as well. So that's what First Wind has done, is basically worked on these groups. They've exploited the situation. In fact, in 2007, they offered a $50 million pledge to the Molokai Community Services Council, which has been looking to buy up Molokai Ranch lands and basically try to operate them themselves. They've been trying to raise $200 million. Molokai Ranch counters by saying that the market price of such lands would be $300 million, and they're not selling. So we know First Wind wants to build a wind farm on Molokai. Initially, it was over 100 turbines. And we know that they built one in Cohocton. So that's basically what Variable Wind Trade, my first article in Honolulu Weekly, dealt with.
So you say that the New York State Attorney General Office is actually investigating this wind developer, but what is the current state of that investigation?
I just spoke with my sources in New York. It's still ongoing. The investigation started July 15th of last year. And interestingly enough, First Wind filed an S-1 document, and basically filed for an IPO, initial public offering, July 30th, which was about 15 days or so after the investigation. So they decided to go public after the investigation was announced. And from what I've been told, as I mentioned before, the talk is that Andrew Cuomo will be running for governor. Since the investigation has been announced, there has been a ethics code, a wind industry ethics code, that has been basically offered to these wind companies. It came out in October 30th of last year, after my article came out. And basically the first two companies to sign on to this code, which would, of course, ban such things as, you know, influencing of public officials, undue influence of public officials, and unethical leaseholder contracts. The first two companies to sign, First Wind and Noble Power, both under investigation by the New York Attorney General's office.
Very interesting. Well, it almost makes you wonder, why would such an ethics code be necessary for things which are clearly just violations of law at any rate, bribing public officials and the like?
That's precisely. This is the point that I make to people. I say, if you have an ethical company, why would an ethical company need to sign an ethics code? Unethical companies sign ethics codes because they're looking to get away from prosecution or get fined or anything. And I think in the case of First Wind, they voluntarily, with quotes, decided to sign this ethics code. Again, from what I've been able to glean from my sources, there's nothing ongoing since this ethics code, which has a multi-agency task force, according to the press release that came out, overseeing it. There's nothing new since this has come out. But what is interesting is another article that I wrote this year. In fact, in April, it came out. It was called Blowing in the Wind, which was also in Harlow Weekly. Now, First Wind, along with a conglomerate or a company called Castle & Cook, which owns land not only here in Hawaii but across the country. In fact, Castle & Cook owns virtually all the island of Lanai. They both want to put wind farms up. As I mentioned, First Wind wanted to put their wind farm up on the island of Molokai. Castle & Cook wants to put their up on Lanai. So they signed a deal with Hawaiian Electric, the state's largest utility, to basically sell power to Hawaiian Electric, power purchase agreements. And the power from these proposed wind farms on Lanai and Molokai would go to Oahu via an undersea cable. Keep this in mind. Lanai and Molokai would not get any of the power from these proposed wind farms. Citizens would not make benefit, would not gain any benefit from these wind farms. On top of that, keep in mind, Lanai and Molokai, the citizens on those islands, pay the highest utility rates in regards to electricity in the state. Per kilowatt hour on Lanai would be 55 cents per kilowatt hour. That's electricity rate. On Molokai, it's in the 40s. I think it's in the mid-40s range. It's over 40 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, these wind farms will have no effect on these rates. The PUC, or Public Utilities Commission, sets the rates, and it's up to them to either raise it or lower it. These farms will have no effect on their electricity rates, and the people on these islands will not gain any direct benefit from these wind farms. In fact, I spoke to an individual named Ron McOmber, who is with Lanaians for Sensible Growth. He's a virulent critic of Castle & Cook, and he says that they're a junta, you know, because they own the island, basically. And he's opposed to the wind farm. I mean, there is opposition on Lanai, and from what I've been told, there's opposition on Molokai. The island split over having a wind farm there.
Well, opposition is growing, but I think most people have a sense of wind power as a clean, renewable, free energy source. But your reporting points to a more sordid reality that this is ultimately a business like any other, and that there are hundreds of millions of dollars on the line with this industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there's a book called Gusher of Lies. And in this book, it mentions that deals with energy independence. And it mentions that there's a great deal of money that's being made by the wind sector. For example, I think the federal tax incentives alone in 2006 were $2.75 billion. Now, you're talking about subsidies and grants and other monies that are going to the wind sector. And another interesting point that I want to keep in mind about the wind business is that wind as a technology, as an energy source, simply doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not reliable. It's intermittent, and it's inconsistent. And this is one of the real tragedies and one of the real reasons to be outraged over the wind industry. These are people that are making perhaps not as much money now because of the credit market problems that they're having. You know, First Wind itself is trying to scramble for financing for their projects because of the economic downturn that's being experienced. In fact, the Boston Globe, in a recent article, June 9th article, mentioned that First Wind, of course, that's based in Newton, Massachusetts, it stated that First Wind spent $120,000 to get access to U.S. lawmakers, this is a direct quote from this article, who were working on a proposal to revive the use of tax credits for renewable energy projects.
So certainly there is a great deal of money at stake here, and it has been shown to be a very unreliable source of power. So there is definitely more than meets the eye to this, and anyone who's examining it with an open mind would have to begin to question whether there is a type of climate industrial complex shaping up, like that which was recently referred to in a Wall Street Journal editorial. What do you think about this nexus of the environmental agenda and big business?
Well, I call this the green agenda, and it's powered by the green movement. Now, you mentioned that Wall Street Journal article. They called this an unholy alliance. I believe that's the article you're referring to. And basically, it's the consolidation of environmental groups, not all of them, probably the smaller ones are not involved because they're doing what environmentalists should, safeguarding and trying to protect the environment. But the larger environmental groups are consolidating or meeting up with, dovetailing with corporate America. And here are some examples. NBC Universal, basically known as NBC, the corporate name is NBC Universal, runs what is called the Green Week. They've had this last year and the year before. Now, this Green Week is on all their stations, including Bravo, USA, and NBC. This Green Week has different tips and different aspects of how to be environmentally friendly, or how to be, as I call it, an ecotist. And you have people like Tina Fey basically telling you how you can be green. One of the most moronic aspects of this Green Week was something called Football Night in America, which is sort of the pre- and mid-game show for Sunday Night Football. They basically cut out half the lights in the studio so they could be green. I mean, it looked like they were basically shutting down for the night. It was moronic. But this is what it takes to be green. Overt green propaganda. Overt propaganda by the broadcast networks like NBC Universal. And who owns NBC Universal? One of its owners? GE. GE is one of the largest producers of wind turbines in the United States. So let me ask you, James. Do you think NBC Universal, via its client company, GE, have an interest in wind technology or the green agenda?
I think NBC Universal has an interest in a lot of things, and one of them is probably not telling the full and open truth to the public. And this case is like one of those cases, I think. And I think you're right that there is a concerted propaganda campaign in a number of the media to try to convince people of the importance of the green agenda in a broader sense. And I think you're right, that does nexus in with big business in so many different ways. What other aspects do you see to this? Obviously, it's not just wind power that's at stake here.
Right. Well, I mean, when you look at the larger aspect of the green agenda, as I call it, and the green movement, this is what you want to keep in mind. I hate to use this as a soundbite, but these green entities are not interested in being green. They're interested in making green. They're not interested in the green that's on their lawn. They're interested in putting green in their pocket. So it's a financial motive for corporate America, and it's probably a financial motive also for these environmental groups, which have to survive. I mean, they need funding to survive. But it's a way of also propagating their beliefs. And their beliefs are not in safeguarding or protecting the environment. They're in behavior modification and lifestyle transmogrification. That is, change your behaviors, change the way you live your life. Don't drive your car too much, cut out your lights, try to reduce energy. Some of that sounds good, but in essence, it's moving backwards, not forwards. Here's the shocking truth. And again, this is probably a reason why I'll never be invited on any of the mainstream TV radio shows, like even the comedy ones like Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart's Daily Show. Not only is wind not effective, but energy independence is futile, as Gusher of Lies brings out, and this is a point that I've felt myself for quite a while now. We cannot be independent of oil and coal. We need oil and coal. This may shock a lot of people. A lot of people may get angry at me, but we need oil and coal. Oil and coal are not going away. So-called fossil fuels are not going away. There is no truly reliable energy source that can replace oil. Wind cannot do it. Wind needs a backup energy source. Solar cannot do it. I like solar. I love solar, but solar can't do the job. It needs a backup energy source. I don't know about biofuels. I would think, from what I hear, biofuels are even greater scandal in some respects than wind. I don't know. It depends on your point of view. Biofuels probably can't do it. There is no energy source that can replace oil and coal at this moment. In the future, who knows? But you know, we'll have to see. There is nothing that can replace oil and coal at this point. And yet, we are being force-fed this environmental propaganda and the scaremongering. Take a look at ABC's 2100, which recently came out. I mean, shows like the Alex Jones Show have run segments on this. I watched their trailer. You know, it's typical climate change fear-mongering stuff. And this is what constitutes the green movement, the green agenda, to scare you, to get you to follow Al Gore, to get you to accept cap and trade and carbon taxes and all of this rot.
Well, I think a lot of people who have traditionally been wary of corporate influence over our daily lives have been disarmed by the green movement, which presents itself as being an anti-corporate movement. But how do you think it's best to confront people about that perception or show them that perhaps there are corporate interests behind this very movement?
Watch ABC's 2100. Watch Green Week on NBC when it comes out. Watch programs that feature the environment. Watch local newscasts that deal with the environment. Watch Good Morning America Today or The Early Show if they have an environmental segment. Watch TV, listen to the radio, read newspapers. In the case of the wind industry, as I call it, as I mentioned before, I'm one of the few reporters in the country who are critical of the wind, as I call it, establishment. There are too many other reporters who are criticizing that are investigating companies like First Wind. Now, when First Wind's investigation was announced, a lot of these newspapers reported it, but they didn't do anything beyond that. I'm one of the few people, and this is very unfortunate, who is looking into these wind companies. And again, what's interesting about the wind sector is this. As I mentioned, in Cohocton, New York, they're going to be taking down these blades from these turbines. You know, here's a project that costs, according to the S-1 document, which is what they had to file with the Security and Exchange Commission last year for their IPO, $265 million for this Cohocton 1 project. And they have to take down all the blades now. I mean, it's simply not worthwhile. And here's another thing to keep in touch, and I'm just looking into this right now. My understanding is that the Italian government is looking into these wind companies, these wind farms, because of mafia involvement.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, this came out in the Financial Times in May. Basically, it meant that, and let me just quote this, anti-mafia magistrates in Italy have opened a sweeping investigation into the wind power sector, where local officials, entrepreneurs, and crime gangs are suspected of collusion in the construction of lucrative wind farms before their eventual sale to multinational companies. So now we have the Italian mafia, as I like to call it, the real mafia, involved possibly in these wind companies and in these wind farms. In fact, there's another interesting aspect that I'm just looking into today, and I'll probably look into it a lot further. The founder of First Wind, which used to be called UPC Wind, is Brian Caffin. Interestingly, Brian Caffin And this is according, you can go to UPC Solar, one of the companies that he is chairman of. According to his own bio, it mentions here that Mr. Brian Caffin, and I'm quoting here, personally oversaw the establishment and construction of the largest wind energy company in Italy, Italian Vento Power Corporation. Now, from what I understand, again, I'm talking to my sources in New York, Mr. Caffin, and of course, this is very early on in this investigation of mine at this point, but it's interesting to know whether Mr. Caffin has any involvement in what's been going on in Italy. He, of course, is involved with Vento Power, which is an Italian wind energy company. According to this bio, it's the largest wind energy company in Italy. So, here's the question that I want to ask, and I don't know if Mr. Caffin would deign to listen to a podcast like this. Well, Mr. Caffin, what are your interests in regards to organized crime in Italy? Are you involved with the mob in some capacity, especially in helping to construct, to build, to get Vento Power up and running? I'd like to see what Mr. Caffin has to say about this. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. But I challenge Mr. Caffin to lay the facts out, because the Italian government is looking into these wind farms in regards to possible connections to the Italian mafia. So I think that's very interesting. And this is something I'm going to be looking into myself. I hope to do some articles, hopefully for Honolulu Weekly, I'm not sure, or for any of the newspapers or magazines that might be interested in this. I'd gladly love to do it. I'm a freelancer, so I'm a free agent, so to speak. But I do want to say this. I do want to say to people out there who are perhaps wind power employees, who are insiders, people who know details, facts about what these wind companies are doing, what these wind developers are doing, if you want to contact me, if you want to talk to me, I'd be glad to talk to you via email, or if you want to call me, that's fine. I won't give my phone number out here, but if it's fine with you, James, if I can give out my email address, would that work?
Yes, of course.
Great. You can send email to ajlanier01@msn.com. Let me repeat that. ajlanier01@msn.com. And if this is heard in Italy, perhaps, if any members of the Italian government, any magistrates who are investigating this want to contact me, they can send emails to that. Again, ajlanier01@msn.com. I also want to, at this point, I doubt they'll react. I want to encourage the mainstream media and talk shows to at least look into this. If you want me as a guest, I'll gladly be a guest. And this is a challenge to Jon Stewart, to Stephen Colbert, Oprah Winfrey, to Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, all the people out there, Howard Stern, all the major radio and television talk shows. Put your money where your mouth is. You want real diversity? Have me on as a guest. And if you don't want me on as a guest, at least look into this. Some of these shows, for The View, for example, I don't watch The View, but they're in New York. This is an issue, at least in regards to the wind companies in New York. That's very important for people in New York. So that's my challenge to these shows, to the mainstream media, to television and radio. You don't want me on as a guest? Okay, fine. But you can have me on as a guest if you want. If not, look into this issue, please. I'm getting tired of being the only one in this, one of the few people in this country who are looking into this and the issue of the wind developers and wind companies.
Well, the media lopsidedness on the issue probably does obviously indicate that there is an agenda at work here. And your findings about the involvement of organized crime in the industry is interesting, but perhaps not surprising given the fact that the industry kind of acts like organized crime at any rate. Well, Mr. Lanier, are there any final points you'd like to make today?
Yes, there are. I did want to quote from an interesting book. It does take a rather conservative tack on the energy issue. It's called Energy Keepers and Energy Killers. And I cite these sources, because I am a reporter and I like to cite other sources, not just my own reporting, which I've talked to you about, but other sources so that people will see that it's not just me that's talking about this. But I do want to talk about this book, and I do want to quote from the section here on renewable fantasies, and it talks about wind power realities. And let me just read this. It says that the American Wind Energy Association claims that 20% of its electricity could be generated by dedicating less than 1% of its landmass to wind farms. Sounds good, right? However, and here's a quote, however, 1% of the U.S. is 23 million acres, the entire state of Virginia. Meeting New York's electricity needs alone would require a wind farm across the entire state of Connecticut, according to a source here, Ossabel. Meeting the United States' 2005 electricity demand with wind power would require blanketing Texas and Louisiana with turbines that somehow would have to operate 24/7, 365 days a year. And that's if these things actually operate. And I do have yet one more point to make. And this is an article in the New York Times that came out on this month, June 8th. It's written by Nathaniel Grunewald. And it mentions what I brought on my article, Variable Wind Trade, that wind power developers say their future depends on tax credits and other government efforts to encourage investment, even as solar and biofuel players say they aim to cut production costs to be competitive at current energy prices. Wind operators say their customers must adapt higher utility bills to support the industry. And this is an interesting article. It's called Brighter Days Seen for Solar Next-Gen Biofuels. It's the June 8th, 2009. And now, it's not critical enough with the wind industry, like my articles are to a certain extent. And I'm fair in my articles, as you probably are aware from your reading, James. But I just want to tell people that wind power is probably one of the biggest sectors, if not the biggest sector, in regards to the alternative energy market that's out there. And yet wind power generally just doesn't work. And this is an issue that's gripping communities across the country in the U.S. Not only in the U.S., but as we've seen with my report about Italy, in Italy as well. And there are wind farms in Japan, I'm sure, James, aren't there?
I believe there are, yes.
Right. So this is an issue that has an impact on various parts of the globe, not only the U.S., but Europe in general. Denmark alone has over 6,000 turbines that produce 19%, supposedly, of electricity. Some sources say 20%. But they haven't given up their fossil fuel plants. They haven't given up their other energy sources. As I mentioned, wind cannot work as a standalone energy source. You need a backup energy source. So my advice, and I hate to advocate anything as a reporter, as a journalist, but at this point, if there are any communities out there that are the targets of wind companies and wind developers, they want to put wind farms at or near your communities, they know. Fight them. That's what's happening in Martha's Vineyard, in the Cape Cod area. There's the Cape Wind Project. And I think Brian Caffin has been involved in that as well. I mean, this guy has his grubby little fingers in a lot of operations. But the people there have been fighting that for several years now. And I wish these people well, just like I wish the people in Cohocton well, and people throughout the world, in Europe, in Asia, and in the U.S., who are fighting wind farms and wind developers. You have my respect and support. And all I can say at this point is those communities that are being targeted by wind developers, please say no. Fight them as much as you can.
Well, I think people are waking up to the real agenda at work, and they are rising up, and that is a hopeful sign. Mr. Lanier, how can people stay in touch with your work and hopefully read your future reports?
Well, I gave out my email for those who are interested in whistleblowing. That's ajlanier01 at MSN. I'm also on Facebook, so you can, I guess, check me out on Facebook. Albert Lanier, I'm on Facebook. My Facebook site is generally for either journalism, history, or other types of feedback. I'm on Twitter, but that's I review films for a website called ain'titcool.com, and that's generally for films. But my Facebook site, I get feedback, so I guess you can go to Facebook. Hopefully I'll be able to keep in touch with you there. But just send emails to my email, ajlanier01@msn.com, and I'll keep up with you. I don't have a website. You know, I'm just a freelance journalist who's trying to survive in this current, what I call, crisis of journalism, where newspapers are folding, and guys like me who are freelancers are just trying to get work, really, whether it's newspapers or magazines, wherever. So I'm trying it in there, and I hope the people who are fighting wind or are interested in the subject are hanging in there, too, especially in these economically disadvantageous times. I do want to say that if people want me to come to their communities to perhaps speak about wind or wind development, I can do that if you're willing to pay my way, but I understand if you can't because these are economically harsh times. But if you're interested, you know, you can contact me at the email address that I have provided, ajlanier01.com. Once again, I want to thank you, James, for having me on your podcast. You're a very brave man.
Well, thank you very much for being a guest today, and you've definitely written some interesting reports, and I'm looking forward to more reports in the future, so please keep in touch. And Mr. Lanier, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, James.